Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, today we're recording in front of a particularly fabulous live audience at the BFI in London as part of our Inspiring Careers in Food events. We have hundreds of the best new food talent exploring careers and the best food industry employers looking to give them jobs. It's like Love Island, but a bit less tawdry. Now, in this episode, we're gazing into our edible crystal ball and asking, what is the future of new product development? NPD, as it's known, is at the heart of what makes the food and drink industry an exciting place to be, especially in light of the huge changes driven by sustainability concerns. Let's face it, NPD is sexy. So how do you get into an NPD role? How can new product developers make a difference? And what might the rewards look like, personally, professionally, and environmentally? Well, with me to discuss the fascinating world of NPD are three fantastic guests. We have Manisha Kotecha, who has more than 20 years of experience in the food industry, both in the retail and manufacturing roles, and is product developer at Waitrose & Partners. Hello, Manisha. Marion Tandy is innovation and culinary chef at Bowman Ingredients, which specializes in making food coatings for frozen and chilled foods. So think breadcrumbs, batters, and plenty more like that. Hello there, Marion. Now, we also have Ben Richardson-Hughes, who is food development manager at the pub retailer and brewer Green King. Hello, Ben. And great to have all of you on the podcast. Everyone, here is your panel. So before we look forward to the future of NPD, just want to have a little sort of delve into the past. I want to ask you, what's the one product that you've seen that's come to market that you think, that must have been amazing to work on, or I wish I'd worked on that, or maybe something of your own that you're particularly proud of? Ben, could you start for us? Any a particular product that you got really excited by?
Yeah, I think what Beyond have managed to do in the market in recent years is pretty amazing. I think them being the first people to kind of hit that benchmark of taste and flavour and texture being equivalent to its meat opposite, I think would have been, you know, a landmark moment to be there.
Okay. Marianne, what about you?
I think one of them is the mochi ice cream. And also because I grew up in Asian, quite Asian culture, and we always come up with rice. But you never think to have this mochi, you know, wrapped in a scoop of ice cream. And when I first had it, I thought, wow, this is really good. So I always wish that I had a magic wand so I can go back and then be part of it or create that.
There might be one coming next. Maybe yours is the next one after that. Manisha, any ideas about a product or even an idea?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to pinpoint one product that you think, oh, I would have liked to have been involved in that. And I think innovation comes in so many different guises. So it could be ingredients, packaging, products, so many different things. So difficult to pinpoint one, but I'd say something years ago that was launched, you know, you probably remember is like popping candy.
Yeah.
So if you think that actual ingredient of popping candy and what it created was like quite a different experience when you ate it in terms of like how it just literally popped in your mouth and then how that was then used across lots of desserts. It was almost just elevating that eating experience to a different occasion.
But interesting what you say that you know, that you, I think you were sort of hinting at the idea that there are these big sort of moments like the Beyond Burger, but also there are small increments of change that are made. So shifting an ingredient to work a bit better as well. And that's as important, but less well known, I guess.
Absolutely. You know, like I said, innovation comes in so many different guises, and sometimes it is an ingredient that you might be using in a slightly different way. It might be a new ingredient that just takes a product to a different level. It could be packaging as well. You know, we look at doy bags now, which are quite common within soup sauces. But if you think years and years ago when doy bags were first introduced, there was a big wow factor in terms of, oh my gosh, I can see the soup. I can see the sauce in terms of the clarity, the freshness.
So there's loads of different areas where development can happen. But the nature of this part of the industry is you're looking to do something new. You're looking to blow people away with something, I guess, whether it's that ingredient or a new product. Does that mean that you need to have that excitement in yourself? Do you need a competitive streak to want to innovate and want to come up with something that somebody else has not come up with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've got to have a competitive edge in product development or to be a product developer, because if you think the industry is so fast moving, it's such a fast-moving industry, consumers' habits, tastes, food trends, everything's changing so fast. And you always want to be that one step ahead. You always want to be the one that's got there first, whether that's meeting a customer need or tapping into that trend and then delivering something innovative for that customer, whether that's a seasonal product, an everyday product. Yeah, competitive is healthy in the role.
Do you feel that sort of competitive drive, you know, are you under pressure in your job?
Well, you're always under pressure from a time perspective as well, because things have got to be delivered to a certain deadline, whether that's your customer is the person that comes into your shop or pub in my case, or whether it's you're selling a product to another business. There's time pressures and you've got to be organized to deliver that.
Yeah. Now, you're working on developing menus at Green King, but you've also worked in the manufacturing side as well, which presumably they must be very, very different ways of working.
Oh, I think the biggest difference between the two is that if you're on the manufacturing side, perhaps the exception of the really, really big guys, that you're generally focusing or developing one core competence or in that particular factory. Whereas if you go to the other side, like what I would call the customer side, the retailer or the food service, you can work with a range of products because in essence, you've got the whole menu to go out. It's starters, mains, desserts, vegan, vegetarian, curries, different types of cuisine. So that's probably the biggest difference. But being in either one is not a bad thing. And being in both and having experience in both will round your CV as a professional.
And when you're working on the consumer side, when you're flogging stuff to a customer, do you need to, I mean, is half the job about marketing, about coming up with the dream or the idea or the way it's going to be pitched as much as the product itself?
I think it's both. I think you can influence sales by many means, including packaging, photography as well. It has a huge impact on people's buying behaviours.
So are you saying that it's not this idea that you're sitting in a room, Marianne, going, what am I going to invent today? Is it very much driven by you've been given a brief and you need to work within that? Or is your creativity a big part of it?
I think it's both, really. You do get a brief, but then it'll be, again, that what do you want to show them as well? So, I think creativity comes as a big part when it comes to innovation, really. And also, it's the balance of it, listening to the customer and then maybe telling what my point of view to the customer. I think that keeping that balance going together, I think it's a wonderful way to work with as well, because you're always learning every day. You never stop learning, and you're learning from the customers and they're learning from you. So I think it's just the balance.
But what about coming up with something bonkers, you know, because, okay, we talked about popping candy, we talked about burgers. What about burgers with popping candy inside? Yeah? Come on. And is there much of a latitude for you to be able to come into work and go, do you know what, I know we're working on this. I've just had a brilliant idea about exploding burgers.
Yeah, you do. Because when, obviously, Manish and Ben probably agree, when you are a chef or when you're in NPD world, I think you get these crazy ideas. It's quite funny, actually. Everybody would laugh. I always get my ideas in the shower. I don't know why. I come out of the shower, I think, oh, I need to create that. And then you put something on the paper. Or even when you're driving, you always think about food, I think. And you could, but then also you had to follow that right pathways. And it's, again, presenting to people that something people would love to eat. And there has to be that elements in there, texture-wise and stuff. So you had to be careful what you're doing.
That's quite exciting as well. Now, those people listening here in the audience will probably be thinking maybe about a career in NPD. And I wondered, is there a clearly defined route into a role like yours, or could you come from anywhere?
Well, from my perspective, actually, I think there's no clear pathway to any role or any job role. It's, again, that what you want to do and what you want to choose. And so, example, I was working as a healthcare worker in the hospital before I came to hospitality industry. And one day I really wanted to, you know, become a chef and then work in the food industry. And then I went to college and start my foundation degree for 3 years. And then from there, I went to University of West London because I realized, oh, you can get a bachelor degree for being a chef, which is quite nice. And then I went to University of West London to do my bachelor's. In there, I realized there's more opportunities in hospitality. It's not just working as a chef in the kitchen. There's so many job roles that you can get into. Then I wanted to go into NPD. I think because I chose that path, because the love for the industry that I had, and I would never change my job role or love that I have for hospitality industry. I think it's made me driven to that goal. But then as a person, I think you have to always remember, if you want something, how would you go there? What would you do to get that? So I did a lot of competitions around while I was studying. I was a single mom that time as well. And my family doesn't live in here because I was adopted. So it was quite a difficult environment. I wanted to be that person. So I worked part-time and I did quite a lot of events around it and the competitions. And luckily, one of the competitions that I won, the MD gave me a job role as an MPD. So that's how I got into MPD, which is I was quite lucky. But then again, I went and did my master's again at University of West London. I think education definitely helped. It will help actually to get into MBD, because I think the balance of having that skills of a kitchen environment and also the education environment has really helped. So it's, again, down to the person and the love that you want to do and how would you create that path, I think.
Malisha, do you think that that's right? It's about mindset rather than about actually doing specific type of training?
An element of both. I think it's such a specialist industry, to be honest. What we're, you know, the food industry says big, but it is really specialist. And I think the first and foremost thing is you've got to have a love of food. You're working in the food industry, so you've, in whichever guise, you've got to have a love of food. But I think it's also asking yourself, do you like the creative side more? You know, do you like being in a kitchen and more hands-on? Therefore, is a chef or a hospitality role more suited to you? Do you prefer the more technical side of it, you know, in terms of the makeup of a product and putting together a product specification? Or do you actually want the more hands-on role within a manufacturing? So I think it's really understanding which aspect of a food role you want, because development can flex as well, and almost then sort of getting experience and knowledge within that arena. And I think you can't beat just learning hands-on in a job. It almost tells you whether you do want to do it or actually that's not for me. So a bit of both.
And what about the science of food? I mean, I personally love the chemistry of food and working out all, you know, the nuts and bolts of it. But is that really that important? Is it more about having a mindset of experimentation and...
Again, it depends. If you wanted to go into technologist or nutrition, dietetics, the scientific element of it, or within the health field, that is more important. But if you want to do sort of more creative product development, an understanding of it is fine, but it's more about flavors, ingredients, recipe development, how they marry together. It's more that. So, you know, you can play to different tunes depending on the specific role within the food industry.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about sustainability, because it seems to feature in so many of the different discussions we have around pretty much everything at the moment on the podcast. Where does sustainability sit on the list of priorities for new product development, and is that changing?
It sits really high. It sits very high in terms of one of the key considerations, not only for a business in terms of product development, but also for customers. Customers are wanting sustainability more and more, whether that's sourcing where their food comes from, animal welfare, local produce, packaging sustainability. You know, it's high on their list.
And is that a sort of an overt thing to be able to communicate that to the consumer, to say, this has been better sourced, this has been high welfare?
I think customers are looking for that. Right. I think that is definitely part of the decision tree, that customers decide where to shop and, you know, who to shop with.
So rather than just a noble principle, it's about, how do I market this as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the sort of the ethos. I think what it does is tell you the values of the company and the ethos and the process behind them. But then how you market it is important as well. There's no point doing it if you're not going to be able to shout about it.
Yeah. So Ben, what about you in terms of sustainability? What areas do you consider when it comes to trying to fit in sustainability into your work?
In terms of our day job, I think it's ultimately what our customers would see on their plate when they go into one of our pubs or restaurants. So, you know, is that a wooden skewer? Is that a piece of greaseproof paper? And we question, does it need to be there? Because ultimately, it doesn't get eaten, it gets thrown away. And the answer might be that it needs to be there. But those are the sorts of things that we think about all the time when we're developing dishes. Likewise with crockery, you know, it's extra washing up, it's more water, it's more chemicals going through the dishwasher. So we're just questioning, does everything need to be there?
Are there a couple of things that sort of that you wish you could get rid of, but something could accrue it? So is there something that you're just sort of trying to maneuver off the table currently?
I think that those two things that I mentioned, obviously they come from trees. That's something that we use a lot of.
Yeah.
So that we're doing a lot of that sort of removing at the moment.
And Marianne, how much of it is of this is an issue for your customers in the industry?
To be honest, it's a big issue, because at the moment, how's the world going on as well with the cost rising and raw material issues that we're having. So there is an issue there. But then like Ben said, there's some things that you can control within. But then again, you always have to come up with a solution. So in our company, we're quite lucky because we have sustainable champions, which we quite closely work with them. And if we have an issue, we normally talk to them and then, you know, they come up with a solution for it. And we do work closely with our customers. We do give them choice of raw materials if it comes from A to B and, you know, carbon footprints. And so they have that choice to select, okay, it's coming from this is so far. But then saying that again, Stephen, it's just that sometimes when it comes to our industry, we have quite a lot of issues that we have to deal with day-to-day basis. The raw material, probably the same example, something that you get it from Spain to France, but there must be something in there. The customer might say, oh, God, I can't have, you know, because there's something in there. So, yeah, that's always an issue. But then again, it's an issue that we can come over and have a solution for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm interested in Manisha, the difference between the exciting side of NPD, the products that end up getting produced, and all of the crap that doesn't actually make it along the way. You know, what is the ratio of success to failure? I mean, it can't be more than 1 in 10 or less than that, or does it not really work like that?
It really doesn't work like that, and it will vary depending on the categories that you work on. It will vary depending on seasonal events, stroke ranges that you may develop. There isn't really a hard and fast rule, but you know, I think you've got to accept that not every single product that you develop will be in your top sellers. Yeah. But that's part of the game, and that's part of finding that balance. Because if you're always going to, in an ideal world, every single product you develop is within your top five sales and stuff. But you've got to have a little, you've got to take some risk, and you've got to have a little bit of stretch in terms of that innovation as well. And just balance it.
Yeah. And in terms of the part of the job that's really satisfying, I mean, I guess coming up with a product and it launching is the exciting bit, but yeah, there must be a lot of back office work. I mean, it's not all just, you know, trying things out in a kitchen and going, oh, amazing, fantastic. There must be loads of research and planning and plotting involved in that as well. Is that a big part of it? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong. Seeing a product on shelf that you've developed or in someone's basket, it doesn't matter how many years you've been working in this street, there is a buzz. All the stuff that goes on for you to get to that point is a bit of a roller coaster. There's ups, there's downs, there's a lot of research that goes in right up front that you need to spend a lot of time doing in terms of customer insights, customer behaviors, macro trends, food trends, the competitive set, your market, and taking all of that and then putting together kind of like a proposition, a strategy, thinking, right, what's the right thing for us? You know, in terms of, right, that's the who and the what, you know, now how are we going to do it? You know, in terms of a product, a recipe, et cetera. Well, lots of collaborative work, you know, working with internal teams, your buyers, your technical managers, nutrition teams, design teams, packaging teams, and then externally as well in terms of suppliers. So lots of collaborative work, lots of teamwork, lots of tight deadlines, as Ben has already said. Your clock is always ticking because, you know, you can't move Christmas. But, you know, it is really, really fun. It's a lot of hard work, but it's definitely worth the ride.
Yeah. We have this fabulous studio audience here. But, Ben, does it take a certain type of person to be successful in NPD? Are there common characteristics or is it just somebody with a passion?
Obviously, a passion is important, as we've already covered, organisation as well, as we've already said. I think you've got to not be afraid to know when's the right time to move on, when's the right time to go to perhaps a different role or a different manufacturer or a customer. So that's certainly important. You've got a belief in yourself and you've got fun with it as well. We've spoken about coming up with ideas in the shower. You know, you've got to put those together and be prepared for them to fail.
Yeah.
They might not work and they might be ridiculous and you've just got to laugh at yourself and move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you also need a degree of resilience.
Okay, tell us about this.
Because, you know, the road from A to B isn't necessarily straightforward. It is when you think of a process and you think, I've got an idea, need to develop it.
Yeah.
Sounds very easy. But, you know, things will come left field, whether that's a raw material that you've used a raw material, you've developed a recipe. And actually in the current climate, there are real challenges with raw materials availability. And all of a sudden, that raw material isn't available. And then you've got to swap that and change that. That then could have knock-on effects in terms of the commercial viability of the product. So you're then going to go back a step and go, right, how do we make sure that that is commercially viable? You know, packaging lead times, you know, there's challenges at the moment in terms of packaging substrates. So again, you might have decided it was going to go into this substrate and now you've got to. So, you know, you have got to be resilient because again, you know, that timeline stays and you've then got to think, right, how do I still get to the end place and launch on time?
And are you often given ridiculous briefs? I mean, you know, do many people say, I want to make a popping candy burger? And do you have to say, Steph, you're an idiot. It's never going to work.
Sometimes you get wacky ideas, but sometimes I think part of the fun is kind of like taking that craziness and smoothing it out a little bit and maybe just tailor it down a little bit. And, you know, sometimes a little bit of craziness is good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Marianne, has the role of new product developer changed over the years? It's interesting that you sort of came into it for such an amazing route. But has it changed over the years, and is it likely to change in the coming years as well?
I think it has changed. Manish and Ben probably agree with me. I think it's massively changed, and it's changing. I think probably can see after COVID, more people going to healthy eating, and vegan trend is coming quite high. I remember when I was at university, the vegan trend kind of started. It used to be gluten-free before and then jumping to vegan, and now it's vegan is everywhere, basically. I think it's quite good because all our companies trying to go green nowadays. But I think in future, of course, it's going to change. I don't think there's a doubt about it. I probably, Manish and Ben would agree with me. But then again, it's as a developer or innovation chef, it's about, again, putting that thinking hat and how can we change future? How can we adapt to the customer's needs? They always say in the hospitality industry, customers is the God that, you know, they comes first for us. In the food industries, we have to respect our customers and listen to our customers, because I always find that we have a customer in front of us and then we have our customer. We're going to be the customer to somebody behind us. So it's just that route that going forward, I think, yeah, it will change. And it's again, it's something to look forward to. And I'm quite excited about it, really.
And what about the financing of all this? Now, let's look back at maybe other companies you might have worked for. Is there enough money being given to you as a budget to be able to work on the ideas, to use people that can explore the right areas, to play with a bit of food science? Is the budget there for you to come up with, to sort of realise their dreams?
Yes, there is a lack of budget sometimes. And when I go into MPD, I found it quite difficult to get into MPD as well. Again, I think when it comes to budget, and also companies keep telling you that you don't have enough experience, you better be a really great chef or you can create sort of good things. And but it's again, you know, sometimes people tell you don't have experience. And but then nowadays, companies are trying to get them, you know, when the university, they get apprenticeships and things like that. I think I would agree that there should be a budget to get people into industry and more, and especially the university students who are struggling to get into industry. But then again, it depends on the company as well. So it's different companies, as you know, have different budget areas, really. But yeah, it's something that we can improve on.
And Ben, I mean, you've been in consumer and in manufacturing. What's more fun?
It depends on the individual. For myself, I find it more interesting on the consumer side, as I said, because you just the range of things that you get to see. But then I suppose I'm one stage removed from that product that, say, Marianne might be working on to a, you know, a very, very technical and detailed level. So I'm pretty happy where I am, and my journey was right for me, but your journey might be different for you.
Okay, that's very fairly put. Now, I think we've covered quite a lot of this, but obviously there'll be huge gaps in your understanding so far. So it's now time to hand this over to the audience and ask if anyone has any questions for us. So, any questions about new product development? Somebody at the back there, right at the back.
Hello, my name's Arunima. I'm not a student, but I'm on the MDS program. I was just curious about how long does it take potentially to develop a product? Like, you think of the idea, and then how long would it take to get it on the shelves or to get it as an ingredient potentially? Or does it depend on the range and the seasonality?
They're going to say it depends. Come on, Misha, can you answer that and say it without using the word it depends?
I will try. Anywhere between 12 and 18 months would be a standard process. But to be honest, a lot of things will take a lot longer than that. And there have been times where I have been challenged to develop things in shorter time scales.
Give us a couple of examples of something that would take a short time and something that would take a long time.
So say, for example, something like a seasonal product, something like a Christmas pudding that needs to be matured for 3 months, 6 months, etc. That would inevitably take a lot longer, because you have to build that time into the time that it needs to mature. So if you're coming up with a new flavor or a new variant, you have to build all that in. So it would take you a lot longer to develop it, because you need to sort of lay it down in terms of maturity. But then the time that you need to develop it up front in that flavor does need to be really quick, because there'll be that clock that I said that's ticking in terms of your overall critical path is ticking even more. So that would be something that's really long. Something short term could be something within the fresh categories, because it is fresh and you're able to kind of like put some recipe development quite together. So for example, a ready meal, if there are no bespoke or unusual raw materials or ingredients, then you should be able to develop a ready meal relatively quickly and be able to turn that around quickly.
Yeah. Ben, does that chime with your sort of timescales?
Similar, yeah. I'd say 6 months to 12 months for us to turn around menus. But you can get innovation in different ways. You can get it from products that are already on the shelves with your suppliers. So that in itself can be the innovation. You can take the sauce from this person and the protein from this person, put them together, and that creates the new dish that we come up with. So there are ways of kind of streamlining that. Yes, I'm going to use that word that you said not to use, but it can depend on the product that you're making. So previously I worked in retail and we launched a coconut oil that got to market very, very quickly. And we needed it very, very quickly because we had another product that let us down. So it's only one ingredient. We need to find somebody to pack it, labeled, on the shelf, done. So it can be weeks, but yeah, somewhere around a year is about right.
Marianne, that's a lot of showers, isn't it, a year?
I just count it on my head, and that actually, yeah. But Ben in Malaysia is right. But there's things that we do work for 4 to 5 years. Yeah, there's things that which I can't really reveal, but yeah.
Excellent. Great question. Thank you very much. Next question, down here at the front.
My name is Daria. I'm a nutrition student at Oxford Brookes. I'm also a critical care manager. So we noticed that obesity has tripled in the last 20 years. Do you have part to play in this with a new development product that are coming up in the future? Or do you just, as you said, follow the customer needs?
That's a great question. So we talk so much about sustainability, but what about other issues and things like nutrition? And anyone come across sort of demands from customers about dealing with things like obesity?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a need for more healthier products and ingredients. But I think it's about having a choice and making sure that the customer's got that choice, so that if you want a healthier alternative, you have that option. It's also about the experience as well. So I think depending on the customer's shopping mission and what they're shopping for, we'll almost kind of like sort of take them down the road. So for example, if you're buying into sort of like premium top tier ranges, you know, it is about an experience, about richness, luxurious indulgence. So they're not necessarily looking for health. Health isn't probably the first thing they're thinking about when they're buying those products. It's more about an experience and indulgence and treat. Whereas, you know, there will be other healthy products that they're looking for. So it's making sure we've got the customer's got choice.
Do you, Marianne, do you get, I mean, there's further down the chain when you're talking about the ingredients, but is that still a concern for you?
It is indeed, yeah. Even though I work in a coating production, sometimes, you know, people always think the coating products are not very healthy, but there's ways we're always looking to make it healthy for the customers, especially adding this ingredient that keep that texture. You know, it's a very big challenge as a chef to come up with that product, because sometimes you can put this amazing, you know, superfood or ingredient in there, but the texture might not deliver it. But there's ways you can come up with that. Basically, portion size is something that I think it's something that we can look into. But yeah, we definitely every day is new things coming and somebody throwing something strange at us. They say, you need to do this and you need to fill this form with, you know, to add up this thing in there. So yeah, there's quite a lot of pressures on the top and obviously from the customers as well.
It's really hard to affect customers' behavior as well, because you can give them choice and that's the right thing to do. But then that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to choose that. So affecting their behavior is probably the hardest thing in all this.
Okay, great question. Thank you very much. Another question?
Hi, I'm Elliot. I'm studying history and political economy at King's College London, and I'm doing a master's in food security next year at University of Edinburgh. I had a question about bespoke nutrition and bespoke product creation. Do you now think about, especially directed at you, Ben, in a hospitality context, customers that might have a desire for a bespoke product which caters specifically to their needs, rather than something like in CPG possibly, where it's harder to create bespoke nutrition solutions?
It's a good one. So giving the customers all those big choices, does that feature quite a lot?
Yeah, we try to make it feature as much as we can. You know, we need to be inclusive. People that come and dine with us are generally families with children as well. So, you know, if one of them has a dietary requirement or a lifestyle choice, then we need to cater for that. And we add up literally when we launch a menu, right? How many choices for vegans have we got? How many choices for vegetarians have we got? How many dairy-free choices have we got? To make sure that we feel we're comfortable with that number, knowing it probably will be a minority, but it can affect the whole group. And obviously they're going to tell their friends and family. So the knock-on effect is huge, even if the sales aren't particularly huge within that.
And Manisha and Marian, I mean, has the prospect of creating products to fit in with personalized nutrition requirements cropped up yet? Is it even on the radar that they will need certain types of nutrition that you need to be able to supply something that will feed into that? Is that on the radar for you?
Yeah, that's definitely coming up in terms of the future, in terms of personalization and really tailoring products to specific diets or dietary needs or lifestyles, like Ben said. But it's just, it's how do you deliver that on such a mass scale? And is it about personalization in different ways? So you might have a core product that you've developed, and then you have additional things that you can add onto it to personalize that is then tailored to that individual. You know, within the retail arena, it's quite difficult.
It's a big one. Elliot, I think you might have to invent the thing. There's going to be a huge market in delivering what that app says that you need to consume. Okay, any other questions?
Hi, I'm Darcy. I study agriculture and food marketing at Harper Adams. With sustainability at the forefront of consumer minds and the growth of alternative proteins, do you think there is, you know, a new product for sort of an insect-based protein product? Do you think that's the future? Do you think that's coming?
People have been eating, you know, if you think about outside of the UK, people do eat insects and stuff. You know, they're a good source of nutrition. You know, they do eat them. And there are food ingredients that are made with sort of like, you know, using insects and things like that. I don't know if it's the future, but there is definitely talk within the food industry about what is the next thing, and insects is part of that.
I think it's a big, big area to look at. Fantastic questions and a brilliant discussion. So thank you very much to Manisha Kotecha, Marianne Tandy and Ben Richardson-Hughes. Thank you all for joining us. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. And remember, if you enjoy the Food Matters Live podcast, you can subscribe via your preferred platform. And if you feel inclined, why not leave us a review? Thank you so much to our guests, to our audience, and to you at home for listening.